Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, world, and welcome back to another episode of Thanks for Coming In. I'm your host, Jillian Clare. How are you all this week? I have been on a major reading kick. I've read the first four Bridgerton books in the past couple of weeks, and I'm just obsessed. I'm waiting. I guess the shipment for the next four is going to be here tomorrow. Thank the heavens, because I'm going to devour those this weekend. That's my weekend plans. I've also realized that every single fiction book I've read this year has been set in London, and I'm always upset that I wasn't born in London. Really gotta yell at my parents for that one. Here's some fun news for you. A film that I was in called Vinyl Child with Creed Bratton and Patrika Darbo. They played my parents in it. It's out now. You can rent it via Ganala Productions. I believe it's on Vimeo and a few other places. And I think it's going to be out there in the world on DirecTV and all that. But hey, go watch it. It's really cute. It's fun. We had a great time filming it. We even got to film at the Santa Monica Pier and go on the roller coaster, which was super dope. And it was really fun to film with Creed and Patrika. We had a great time. Short films are always a blast because it's obviously a short amount of time to film it, you know, 4 days. But it was a lot of fun. We had a good time, and it's a cute movie. Go watch it. You can also find links and where you can watch it and all that stuff at vinylchildmovie.com. Today on the show, we have Adam MacArthur. You've heard his voice in Star vs. the Forces of Evil, Jujutsu Kaisen. I think I said that right. We had a great time talking. Really fun dude and super, super talented. So here's my conversation with Adam MacArthur. Welcome to the show, Adam.
How's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Every time someone welcomes me to their show and I say, how's it going? I'm always like, everyone says, how's it going at the beginning of a podcast? And I'm always mad that I do it. But for some reason, I can't help but do it. So I'm good, except for that. I feel like I wish that. I had. Yeah, except for that, I'm good.
Should I just edit that out?
Now you can't, because then it will just be, you'll just hear nothing. I've said nothing True. Except addressing the fact that I asked you, how's it going at the beginning of this podcast?
I know, but I feel like it's always like the icebreaker that you need to start the conversation so that it's not like completely awkward talking to somebody you don't know and not seen either.
I guess you're right. It is a very nice momentum maker, if you will.
It is. Are you in LA or are you on the East Coast?
I'm in LA. Yep.
You're in LA.
And I'm like one of seven people who haven't left during the global pandemic.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. And I just keep seeing people's like posts on Instagram and stuff, like being out and like going to outdoor dining. And I'm like, no, I am far too scared.
Yep.
I cannot leave my house.
Exactly. I'm with you. I'm with you on that.
I was asked to do a job recently, and I said, no, I just don't think it's safe. I don't think it's safe. I stay in my house.
There's a project that I'm on right now, and it's the only thing that I've done during the pandemic where I'm actually going into a recording studio for. And we had to, like, there was lots of talk about, like, oh, what are the precautions? What are you doing in order to make sure that this is going to be okay? And
right. But that's the way to do it, because I see, like, I have a lot of friends in the indie filmmaking world, and I know people who are making independent films right now. And in my brain, I'm thinking, your $250,000 budget cannot cover PPE for everybody, cannot cover testing. There's no way. There's absolutely no way.
Yeah, I know. It's scary. And I also feel like it's been so long, too, at this point, that if you haven't been directly affected, you're kind of like, well, this is just how it is, you know, and you're willing to take more risks. But it's just you just got to be so careful. It's only a matter of time, really.
It's true. And we're so close to the end of this thing, or at least, you know,
seemingly
to seeing a little bit of light. Like, I just hang on for a couple more months, guys, and then we can do things again. Maybe.
Well, we forget so quickly. Like, last October, everything was starting to open up, and it was like, we have our freedom back. And then all of a sudden, it was worse. In December, it's like, oh, the numbers are worse. LA, 1 in 3 people have had COVID. And you're like, what the? You're looking around at everyone like,
I know. It's like you look at everybody like they're a leper.
Yeah. You got the cove, man? Yeah,
I got the cove. You got the cove, dude. It's true that we keep on like opening up and then closing again because the numbers get worse. And it's hysterical. When they started opening things up again like last week, everyone was like, yeah, but the numbers are great. I'm like, yeah, because we've been staying home.
Yes.
So now you're going to open it up and then it's going to be worse again.
Exactly. Yeah. It's frustrating. Okay. It's fresh.
Well, what's the project that you're working on right now? Can you talk about it?
Yeah, totally. I'm on an anime actually called Jujutsu Kaisen. It's sort of like the biggest anime coming out of Japan right now, which is really awesome. So I'm working on that. Episodes air weekly for that. The dubbed episodes air weekly on Crunchyroll, which is like an anime streaming service, and then also HBO Max. I voice a character on that show named Yuji Itadori. He's the main character. He's such a good boy. He's this kid who's basically his sole motivation. Cause you know, anime, you can boil everyone's motivation down to like one sentence.
Yes.
Is to just help people. So he goes to like, I mean, and then you amp that up on like an anime scale. So, right. You know, in order to help people, he has to like swallow a cursed finger from a demon who's plagued the world for like ever and get powers to then protect his friends and all this stuff. So yeah, it's a really wild adventure, but it's fun. It's super fun. It's got a lot of comedy. It's got horror. It appeals to like, if you're into like the supernatural stuff, it appeals to that. So it's been a lot of fun to work on.
That's so cool. I love anime. I'm a big Miyazaki fan.
Awesome.
And I loved Death Note, too, before they turned it into the awful live action thing that they did. I don't even know what that is.
Yes.
It's just weird. but I love anime. And I think it's such an interesting form of expression, because it is so different and it's its own thing. And I really appreciate that about the genre.
Yeah. What's cool is like in Japan, I mean, you know, here a lot of like, you know, Western cartoons are considered for children. Like it's either for kids or you've got Adult Swim where it's like, oh, this is an adult cartoon, or you've got, you know, stuff like The Simpsons or like Steven Universe or whatever. In Japan, they literally have genres and types that are meant to be for every age. Like, oh, this is for male and female in their early 20s, or this is like for adult men. This is, you know, and obviously anyone can like anything and that's totally fine. But as far as like just breaking
appealing
it down,
demographics.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's interesting with anime too. I feel like at least my first introduction, and I don't even know if it would be called anime, would be like Pokemon. But I feel like that. Oh,
yeah, that's anime.
I feel like that was the first introduction for me as a child.
Yeah. Yeah. I think. Like, I remember Dragon Ball Z and, like, one of them called Ranma Half when I was in high school. But as far as, like, really, really getting in and, like, being like, oh, this is awesome, for me, it was Pokemon too. It was awesome.
I mean, Pokemon was the best. I still have my Pokemon cards.
Do you? Oh, you're balling then. You're like, no wonder you haven't left LA. You're like, I don't need to do anything else. I can just live off the riches that I've saved since my childhood.
I definitely need to like look into if I can sell them, because I feel like I probably have like some good like Charizard cards that are worth something or something like that. I don't know.
Do you have any kind of awareness of the value that certain okay. Okay, let me just tell you. Listen, do with this knowledge what you will, but make sure you take it to somebody trustworthy, and you don't just like send it off to have someone look at it or grade it or whatever. Because a lot of those original cards are worth a ton of money, especially if they're in good shape. So, you
know. Oh yeah, they're like sitting in a book somewhere, all perfectly in their like plastic little things.
Dang.
I know. I need to sell them. I also thought the Beanie Babies were going to be a big selling thing at one point too. So I saved all of those, and I don't think that that's going to work out for me.
Yeah. During this pandemic time, my parents, you know, we like go through the, oh, I'm going to build up my office and I'm going to clean out my shed and all this stuff. So my parents were like, hey, you have 23 storage bins of toys at our house and we need you to get them out of here. And I was like, okay, cool. Like bring them down. So my parents drove down. And they brought me all my childhood toys. So I, too, had, like, some old Pokemon toys, whatever. And there was a giant storage bin dedicated to Beanie Babies. And I'm not kidding you. There were, like, 300 of them. And
I'm with you.
I mean, I find it very fun to, like, go through the stuff and look on eBay and then post stuff. Like, I sold a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I dumped an entire storage bin of Beanie Babies at Goodwill because they're useless.
I have this like weird thing in the back of my head where, and I know it's totally false, but I think Toy Story really messed with me as a kid.
So you can't get rid of them.
And it's like, I can't get rid of them. I feel like I'm throwing away a soul and it's just not okay. Like I really need to figure that out. I need to deep dive on that.
Did you like love your Beanie Babies or were they just like, you did? Okay.
I did. I loved my Beanie Babies and I was like, it was like a full on obsession, like a full-on obsession.
See, for me, all my childhood toys were like, I mean, I loved them, but a lot of them were just like, I just loved collecting also. So the Beanie Babies were like, I was like, all right, I can part with those. But when I was going through all my childhood stuff, I mean, I have like all the original Power Rangers Zords, all my original Ninja Turtles toys, G.I. Joe. And I was the kind of kid too that would like, I would slowly take it out of the packaging. I would keep the box. No parts are missing. Like,
oh my gosh.
I actually surprised myself going through them. I'm like, this G.I. Joe set comes with like 72 missiles and there are 72 missiles here. What kind of child, like a horrible, what a horrible kid.
That's pretty
amazing.
I never
played with my toys.
That's pretty amazing. I know I have like a Cinderella carriage that's still in the box, I think.
Oh, that's cool. I mean, Disney stuff is great. Yeah.
So tell me about how you got involved in acting, because it sounds like you've been doing it for quite a long time. And
So gosh, I actually was just looking at my SAG card and I think I'm coming up on like my 21st anniversary of being in the
dude me too
nice. Well, I grew up in Northern California, so I grew up in the East Bay area, like 20 miles east of San Francisco in a little city called Pinole. And I always wanted to be an actor. Like, I literally do not have a memory of not wanting to perform or like watching a show and being like, I want to do that. And I always asked my parents if I could take classes and all that stuff. And it wasn't until I was 16 years old, I got a gift certificate to an acting school in San Francisco. This acting school called Kids on Camera. And it was phenomenal. The place is phenomenal. I'm pretty sure it's still there to this day. A lady named Judy Berlin was the owner and operator of that. She had really fantastic coaches. And so, yeah, so that's like where I started. The kid, actually, speaking of Toy Story, the original voice of Andy in the first Toy Story, like came from that acting school. So that was like Andy came from here. And the guy who played Jimmy Olsen on Lois and Clark. Do you remember Lois and Clark? The Superman?
You know, it was a little before my time, but I know of it.
Okay, yes. So it was this like Superman show. Dean Cain was Superman. Terry Hatcher was Lois Lane. And the kid who played Jimmy Olsen also went to this acting school. So, you know, they had like a lot of claims to fame.
Right.
So, yeah. So I took classes there for a few years. And pretty much like right after I started, an audition came through and my teacher... who was named David Rosenthal, was one of the teachers there. He was like, hey, you know, we had this audition come through. Do you want to audition for it? And it was a voiceover audition to be the teen voices in all the Macy's back to school radio commercials that were like,
oh, wow. Launch.
Yeah. So I was like, yeah. And I ended up getting this thing.
Oh, my gosh.
It's how I got Taft-Hartley into SAG, because some of them were not just radio. They ended up being TV spots, too. I did probably like 30 commercials over the course of like 2 years, and
that's back when like commercials actually paid well.
Totally. So yeah, and I was like, you know, like by this time I was like 17, maybe 18 years old, but it was like, okay, I'm doing the thing, you know. And I like I always knew I wanted to do, I have done on camera, but I also have always loved voiceover, so I knew I wanted to pursue that also, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So all like some of the money that I earned from those commercials, I saved up to get an animation demo, like a voiceover reel. Got myself all set up there in San Francisco. Wow. and was there for until 2003 is when I moved down.
Did you go to college for acting as well?
So I did junior college up in Northern California for 3 years, and then mm-hmm. I actually went to Pepperdine, which is here in SoCal, in Malibu. And I did theater and TV production as my major there.
What made you want to do TV production?
I actually, up in the Bay Area, I worked for a TV production company as like an intern.
Fun.
I booked a commercial, an on-camera commercial for this Gatorade type drink called Cytomax. It was the sports drink that sponsored the Oakland Raiders.
Amazing.
The production company that shot this commercial also shot the morning pregame shows on Sunday mornings for the Oakland Raiders. We just had such a fun time on set. They were like, hey, would you want to come work at our company? And I was like, sure. Okay.
Might as well.
Yeah. So I had done a little bit of TV production up there, and I didn't want to I didn't want to go to school just for acting.
Right.
I thought, you know, I might as well expand my horizons a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
In all honesty, in hindsight, I probably wouldn't have done either of those things. I probably would have done like marketing or business or something that could have been applied to like the business side of acting.
Right.
but yeah. So Pepperdine, and I graduated in 2005.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything.
You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
And then what? Did you just start? Were you doing voiceover while you were still in school, or did you kind of put it on hold?
Yeah, no, I started as soon as I got down to LA. I got set up right away with an agent. I feel like stuff like this doesn't happen anymore, but I was in Samuel French, which actually you can't be in anymore.
Oh, I miss that place.
I know. I was in Samuel French, which, you know, if you're listening and you don't know what that is, it was a bookstore that had, like, you know, plays, scripts, any and all things film, TV, theater related.
Yeah, anything you needed.
I was in there picking out a play just to read, and someone was like, "Hey, do you have representation?" And I was like,
"Oh my god,
no." And so that's how I got my manager that I was with for a very long time.
Wow.
And that so I started when I was in school and tried to just get things going right away. Most of what I booked at the beginning was on camera commercial. I was doing, like, I don't know, like 10 commercials a year or something.
Holy crap.
Yeah, this was like, man, if I
good old days.
Yeah, if then me could talk to me now, I would be like, or no, vice versa. If I could talk to myself then, I would be like, dude, you have it so good.
You have it so good right now.
Enjoy it while it lasts because things are going to change.
Things are going to go in a different direction.
Yes.
So how long until you started working on, like, bigger projects? Because I read that, I mean, you were in Star Wars, The Clone Wars, which is really cool. Is that the first, like, big thing that you consider your breakout?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, definitely. I would definitely say Clone Wars was that for me. Really, you know, I kind of bounced around to different agencies for, gosh, probably about 10 years when I first moved to L.A., and it was an interesting journey because, you know, everybody, like, I mean, of course you expect the best and you want the best from your agents. Mm-hmm. And they want the best from you. And sometimes it just doesn't work out. And I'm currently repped by CESD for voiceover. Mm-hmm. And truthfully, my career changed 1,000% when I signed with CESD. I mean, within a month, I had booked a Disney pilot, and I booked an animated series that LeBron James was producing.
Holy crap.
Which, I mean, not a lot of people heard about. but it was still cool. You know, I got to meet LeBron, and Mark Cuban was involved. Like, they had a massive premiere party, which almost doesn't ever happen for animation. So that was really cool. But then, Star Wars Clone Wars, I booked 3 episodes on that show. And I mean, it was such a cool experience. Well, first of all, that audition, as with a lot of voiceover auditions, you don't really know what you're auditioning for. They'll give you, like, character description. You know, they'll tell you a little bit vaguely about the show, but it's never really exactly what the show's about. It's always some, like, code words. So I booked this job. I didn't know it was multiple episodes. So I booked a job. I get to the studio. I'm kind of sitting in the lobby. And this production assistant walks out and hands me a piece of paper. They're like, "Oh, hey, so great to see you. We're so glad to have you. Da 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 da." I'm like, "Thanks so much." They're like, "We'll be right back." And I go, "Okay." So I'm just chilling, me by myself in this studio, kind of like the first, you know, bigger thing. Seemingly, you can just tell by the studio, it's like a bigger thing,
right?
And I look down and I'm reading this letter, and it says, "Dear Mr. MacArthur, on behalf of George Lucas, we'd like to welcome you to the Star Wars family." And I was like,
did you just crap yourself?
I was literally like, oh my God. Oh my God. I looked around. I'm like, okay, there's nobody around. I stepped outside and I called my parents. I was like, I booked Star Wars. I'm going to be on Star Wars, Clone Wars on Cartoon Network. And if,
oh my God.
I walked back into the waiting room, which was now packed with like voiceover royalty. Dee Bradley Baker was in there.
Wow.
James Arnold Taylor was in there. And if people listening don't know who these people are, Dee Bradley Baker is in everything animated that you've ever heard. James Arnold Taylor was Obi-Wan Kenobi on all the Clone Wars.
Such like a shell shock.
It was crazy. It was crazy. It was one of those like, oh my God, what am I doing? What am I doing? What am I doing? I don't belong here.
Yeah.
I don't belong here.
It's like immediately you want to throw up and then you're like, are you sure that I'm supposed to be here?
Yep. Yep.
Should I leave?
Yeah, it was a very, very cool experience. And then after that, I feel like the momentum just slowly kept building.
And that's usually all it takes is that one thing. And then all of a sudden, the ball is just rolling and you're able to get the next thing and the next thing after that.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and it still can, you know, take some time in between, as you know, but like it's just how it goes. And
yeah.
I always, people are always like, oh, what's a bit of advice for somebody who's acting or starting acting or, you know, and I always say perseverance is the key. Like if you want to do it, you just have to be here and you have to keep doing it.
It's true. It's true. I was a child actor and it's interesting to have grown up in the industry. And once I hit that like 20 year mark or 20 years old mark.
Yeah.
I watched people start to fall off. People that I had spent, 10 years going to auditions with suddenly decided to take their lives in different directions, which, all good. But it was just interesting to watch that dynamic of like people starting to be like, nope, I'm not doing it. It's not for me.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but for me, that totally trips me out.
It's weird.
Like my very, very best friend, we went to college together. Everyone else sort of faded off and he and I were like, no, dude, we're here. Like, we're still doing this thing. And
yeah.
he works a ton. He's a Muppeteer for Henson Studios.
Oh, my gosh. How fun.
He does a lot of stuff. And then all of a sudden in October, he was like, hey, dude, I got to tell you, we're moving to Nashville. I'm like, what? No, everybody, like, what the heck? But it trips me out.
It trips me out, too, because it's just... It's such an interesting lifestyle to choose in the first place, right? Because you know that as an artist, it's going to be, your life is going to be a little bit more chaotic.
Right.
It's not going to be the simple go to work every day, come home, do the dishes. It's not that.
Yep.
It's like, yeah, I'm going to work once this month and then maybe not for the next 2 months. So let's be smart.
Right.
So it's already an interesting choice. And then when people leave, it just feels so bizarre. It's also a choice that I don't think I could ever make.
I don't think I could either. I'm also very much like all right, guys, we're all in this together, right? Right? Looking around, right? Hey, yeah, no.
You're the last one standing.
Dang it.
Oh my gosh. So on this show, I like to have actors share stories from auditions, either things that you'd didn't get that you wanted or weird auditions, funny auditions, heartbreaking things. Do you have a story that you would like to share with us?
Yeah, I'll tell you something that haunts me still to this day. And I think it's truly heartbreaking.
Oh, my God. I love it. OK, I'm ready.
So I mentioned earlier this manager found me in Samuel French. And he had a lot of really amazing clients. A lot of people who were with him when I was with him have gone on to like be nominated for Oscars and things like this. Like these people are working. Colton Haynes was in there at the time, Nate Parker, like just a ton of people who work all the time. So it was like, I was set up for success.
Right.
And I also said I was in school at the time. So I was going to school at Pepperdine during this time. And sometimes I would have multiple auditions a day and classes in between. So I would be driving from Malibu out to Warner Brothers. And then I would drive back for a class, get a call back, have to drive back out to Warner Brothers.
Which, if you don't live in Los Angeles, that is the worst because traffic is the worst.
It's crazy.
And going from West Hollywood or Hollywood all the way to Malibu is a nightmare.
It could have been like 2.5 hours sometimes to get from one place to the other, depending on traffic. So I got an audition for Cold Case, which at the time was like the hit show. I think it was CBS. It was like, you know, it was like a CSI or one of these just like big procedural shows. It was known for having like auditions that were crazy for actors, like 12 pages of sides, giant monologues. They had all these, they just like, it required a lot. They were always emotional. Like the guest star characters were always like breaking down and bawling by like page eight of your sides and stuff like that. So I'm very excited. I'm like, to me, that's exciting. I it's a fun challenge as an actor to get material like that. So I get this audition for Cold Case, and it was for this sort of like, not really who I am kind of character. More of like this punk alternative-y kind of kid. He was like 16, but when I was in my early 20s, I was still auditioning for stuff that was like 16, 17.
Listen, I'm 28 and I still get auditions for 20. I don't know what it is.
That's amazing. So I was like, this is cool. And I had done an indie movie up in San Francisco where this was sort of the kid, sort of a similar kind of kid. And I was like, I got this. So I drove out to CBS and did my audition. And in my audition, the casting director was like, you're this guy. Like there's no doubt. This is you. He goes, all right, here's what I want you to do. I want you to memorize these additional sides. Cool. So on top of like the 12 pages, he gave me another
here's
like
another 10 pages.
I was like, cool, I'll perform the entire script for you in my audition. But seriously, I was like, this is awesome. That had never happened to me before. He was like putting his arm around me. He's like, I'm so grateful you're here. I'm so thankful. So they actually were like, go out into the hallway, work on those extra pages, and just hang out for a bit. So I did. So I went, hung out for a bit. Then I came back in. Producers were there. Okay.
Boom.
Like, oh, this is amazing. Producers are already here. Great. So I did my audition. The producers clapped at the end of my audition. They're like, that's amazing. Which, by the way, this doesn't happen anymore. You're like, do your auditions from home and whatever. This was like, it was amazing. I felt like I was already part of the team. It was just amazing. So they're like, okay, one of the producers couldn't be there. They're like, oh, this person really wants to be able to see you. Can you just like, we'll call, we'll probably have you come back. And I was like, okay. And I was like, oh, do I drive all the way back out to Malibu? Whatever. But this was like maybe like 1 p.m. or something like that. So still plenty of time left in the day. So I cruise back to Malibu. And I don't hear anything. I don't hear anything for the rest of the day. And I was like, ah, oh, that's such a bummer. I thought that, you know, they would at least, I don't know, I would hear something, right?
Right.
So like 8 p.m., 8:30 p.m. comes and my phone rings and it's my manager. And I'm getting the like the nervous feeling that you get when you're about to get a call that you booked something.
Yeah.
I'm very excited. And my manager goes, dude, where are you?
What?
And I go, in my dorm? And he goes, ugh. And I go, what do you mean, where am I? Why would I be anywhere else than where I am right now?
Oh, my God.
And he's like, dude, you had a call back at 7:45 p.m. at CBS.
What?
And I go, nobody told me. I was like, I looked at my email. I was like, I have no email. I have no text. I have no call. You didn't tell me. And he goes, what do you mean no one? And I heard him pause as if he realized somebody forgot to tell me in that office. And then he tried to play it off like it wasn't a big deal. I couldn't get back over there and they ended up casting someone else for the part.
Oh my God.
And I really feel like that one audition. Now, of course, anything can happen at this point. You never know. This is the fun thing about LA is you just never know what you're going to get an audition for and you could be perfect for and then your entire life changes.
Mm-hmm.
However, I feel like not booking that episode, which again, there was no reason for me to believe that it would have been any other way based on the reaction in the room and what they were telling me.
Yeah.
That the trajectory of my career might be a little bit different today. Like I might be working more on camera than VO. So.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, that's heartbreaking. Cause that was like, that's not even like something that was like, oh no, they went another way because they didn't like you. It's like, no,
No, that and
they loved you.
They told me that they were really disappointed I didn't make my audition.
And that, oh my God,
like, crushed me, because I'm like, this wasn't my fault. This wasn't my fault, and nobody's really apologizing to me either.
That is such a punch in the gut.
Yeah. The gut and the butt. I got butt punched. I got butt punched by Hollywood.
Oh, man, that's awful. Yeah. That was bad.
I know. Sorry. So, yeah, that's not a crazy audition story. It's just a truly,
that's truly heartbreaking
one.
Oh, man. I remember Cold Case, too. And I think I was like a kid when I would have auditioned for that show. And I remember exactly what you're saying. It was always such a long audition.
Yeah.
So many pages.
Yeah.
And it was a good show. Ugh.
It was a good show. It was a really good show. I put so much work into that audition.
Mm.
And, you know when you know, too. Like, you know when you go and crush something, you're just like that. I couldn't. Even no matter what direction they go, I crush that.
Right. There's like two auditions that I found that seem to happen to me. It's either you like go in and you crush it and you're like, hell yeah, I got that in the bag, and then you don't get it. And then the other one for me is I don't really care about this, so I'll just do my job and do the audition, and then you book it.
Of course.
Because you don't care.
Totally. Yeah. I've had those two. I've had those two.
It's like they can sense it. They're like, oh, she just wants a job. Okay, cool. We'll give it to her.
Have you seen Krampus, the movie Krampus?
Yes.
Okay. So I voiced some of the evil gingerbread men and then some of the evil elves in Krampus.
Oh my God.
That audition was ridiculous. Like, there was literally no script. It was like, we need you to sound sort of German, sort of not, kind of angry, like you're working on something at a fast pace. And I remember looking at that like, what does this even mean? And I went into that audition. I'm not kidding you. When I was done, I looked at the audio engineer at the agency and I was like, well, that was, I did that. That was a thing that I just did. All right, talk to you later. And then I booked it and, you know, Krampus was, I think, still sort of headed towards that kind of cult classic.
Oh, yeah. Trajectory. I can definitely see it becoming a cult classic with like in the next 5 years.
Yeah, totally. So that was a fun one.
Oh, my gosh. I love that. Auditions like that are always so funny. It's just like, do this, but then don't do this, and then also do that. And you're just like, okay.
Yeah, to me.
I will do that then.
I will do what I think you mean by saying that. Yeah.
It's so true. Before I let you go, I just want to talk to you real quick about Star versus the Forces of Evil, because you're a Funko Pop character, and that is so cool.
That's pretty wild. That's pretty wild. As soon as the Funko hit, I was like, all right, I have achieved my lifelong dream, and now I can retire, but I'm not going to retire.
I mean, that's amazing. As soon as you have a doll of a character that you've done, like, that is like prime.
Well, what's cool too is like a lot of Disney TV originals, like Disney TV animation originals, don't actually have a lot of merch. Of course, stuff that's like legacy projects like DuckTales, like you'll see merchandise for that. But Star vs. the Forces of Evil didn't have a ton of stuff. So when Funko was like, oh yeah, this show's crazy and a hit, let's make some stuff. It was also really exciting for the fandom because they lost their mind.
That is so flipping
about
cool.
The Funkos. Yeah, it's cool.
So cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. How can people follow you on social media?
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, even though, you know, whatever. all at the same thing. At Ninja Mac. So NINJAMAC.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. It was so fun to talk to you.
You're awesome. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks again for listening to the show. Tune in next week. I'll have somebody else on, just as I always do. Make sure to rate and review the show wherever you're listening to it right now. Hit that subscribe button. Get the word out. And as always, thanks for coming in.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.